The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Blog Talk Radio.
The Senate will come to order.
Are you ready?
Yeah!
I want to know if everybody ready.
Yeah!
All right, here we go. Everybody, get on up and do your stuff. Did you hear what I say? I said, everybody, get on up and do your stuff. You better get up.
On this Friday. We had a wonderful, wonderful last week. You are listening to Perk Badger, and that is Do Your Stuff. I love that song. I think it just, I think it kind of says what we do here on Congress College. And of course, you guessed it, Congress College talks about Congress. My name is Elizabeth. I'll be your host for the 30 minutes where you get to hear all things Congress. What that means is College airs twice weekly, and on the Monday show, which is usually 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we typically outline the week, and we talk about what will literally come up in the United States Senate and in the House of Representatives. And then on the Friday show, which is the one you're listening to, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, this is when we recap the week. We talk about what actually done. What happened in the Senate of the United States? What happened in the House of Representatives? Did they do what they said they were going to do? You know, in the million-dollar question, were you representing well in Washington, D.C. for the week? Because think about those guys who get in the Senate, those guys who get out that are representing you in the House, they are speaking for you. They're speaking for me. They're representing us. So do you think we should at least have a general idea about what they're up to? Well, I mean, that's one of the reasons I do the show. I do Congress College also to familiarize folks with the free website, grade.com. And, of course, gradegov.com lets you grade a member of Congress. How about your member of Congress? You want to give him or her an A? Maybe you want to give them an F. And, of course, the grades we're talking about are the A, B, C, D, or F, just like the grades we got in school. You figure out who you want to grade. Then you figure out what grade you want to give them, and then you go ahead, and the site will auto-prompt you to write a letter. It starts the letter, dear Senator so-and-so, I gave you whatever grade, a B today, and you finish it. And then I always urge people to check their spelling because I'm a really bad speller. And then once you click send, you've just graded a member of Congress, and you've written them a letter. And they look at it, folks. I say this all the time. Members of Congress pay attention to gradegov.com because they want to know what you think of them. They want to know where they stand with you. And what better way for them to figure that out than to be able to pop over to gradegov, take a look at their own page, see what grade they're getting, and maybe even read your letter. So tell your friends, tell your family about gradegov.com. I would greatly, greatly appreciate it. All right, so we're pretty much done with the housekeeping. Let me say hi to the folks in the chat room. Hey, Andrea. How are you? John had a birthday. Happy birthday. Hey, Bob, I hope you're not snowed in up in Connecticut. All right, let's get started. I hear that the voice is a little choppy. I'm going to tinker with something, but it may be what it is for today. Let's talk about the Senate first. The Senate finally passed the tax-free Internet bill. They did this Thursday before they went out. No, they're out all next week. This is a permanent ban on taxing the internet. And it was part of a larger bill. It was part of a customs bill. It's now on its way to the president. This prohibits state and local governments from imposing taxes on the internet, so that they can collect taxes or taxing email services. Seven states have been collecting taxes since the beginning of the internet. They are grandfathered in. Congress has voted eight different times to extend a temporary ban on stopping states from imposing taxes. Why would a state impose taxes on the internet? Well, obviously to raise money. But I'm here to tell you that the internet will no longer be able to be taxed by these states and governments and cities that have talked about it, toyed with it, played around with it. It makes it illegal for a state or a local government to impose a tax on internet access. Yippee, bully for us. Yippee, hooray. Hey, I'm looking at the chat room again, and Bob from Connecticut says that the audio is great. Thank you, Bob. I appreciate that. Okay. You also have North Korea. Sanctions on North Korea. The Senate passed this 96-0. The House passed it in middle January, 418-1. That's on its way to the president. Obviously, looks like he will sign it. And it improves the enforcement of sanctions against the government of North Korea. You know, they launched something last weekend. They claimed it was a satellite. You think it was a satellite? Here, I heard this all the other day in talking about this capability. If they can launch a satellite, well, they can launch a missile, right? Isn't that the same as if you can lift a 2-pound can of, I heard this the other day, peas or peaches? Guess what? You can lift 2 pounds of something. So they launched a satellite. I guess that means they can launch a missile. So the Senate did that this week. House of Representatives, they passed something. I think it's kind of cool. This is a quote from Pete Sessions. He's the chairman of the House Rules Committee. As the administration comes to a close, there's one legacy that Barack Obama is not talking about. Again, this is Pete Sessions of Texas. And that's the fact that he is a $20 trillion man. In just 7 short years, our national debt has nearly doubled from just over $10 trillion when Obama took office to nearly $20 trillion. He goes on to say it's immoral, it's horrible, it's a terrible thing to do to generations. And why is he saying all of this? Because they passed a bill that would require a member of the administration to come before Congress prior to each and every potential debt limit increase. They'd have to provide testimony, detailed reports on what is driving the debt, the progress they're making to try to reduce it, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know. Was that just a feel-good vote? You think the Senate's going to do anything about it? And, of course, this president won't have to raise the debt anymore while he's president, so he'll never have to come before Congress. It's probably a good idea. It's probably a good idea, and I would hope if we get a Republican president, he is willing to do that on his own. Come to Congress. Have a joint session of Congress. Tell the American people why it's so important to raise the debt limit again and again and again. All right, what else is the House of Representatives up to? They are behind the scenes considering teeing up a reconciliation bill. I mentioned this on Andrea Shea King's show Wednesday night. Remember what the reconciliation bill brought us? It brought us Obamacare. That's how they passed Obamacare back in 2009 through the Senate of the United States. They used the reconciliation process. Why? Why is that the way, the cool way now? Because it doesn't require 60 votes in the Senate. It only requires a majority. So this current Congress is considering potentially teeing up a reconciliation bill that could repeal Obamacare and then sending it to the new president, presumably a new Republican president, in early of next year. Wouldn't that be phenomenal? Let's think about this for a minute. Wouldn't that be phenomenal? to roll back Obamacare, get rid of it, and go back to pre-2009, and then have the likes of maybe Dr. Ben Carson as the Secretary of HHS. Make him the first nominee you send up to the Senate on January 20th. You come out of the cold after giving your inauguration speech on January 20th, and after you eat your lunch in Statuary Hall in the Capitol with all the members of Congress, you come over to the Senate of the United States and you sign a nomination and send it to the Senate. Heck, you drop it off yourself. You're the president. You drop it off to the desk yourself, which nominates Dr. Ben Carson to be Secretary of HHS, and the Senate votes on it that day. They could do that, folks. They could have the roll call vote. They could have the debate and the roll call vote that day. The majority leader, presumably, the Senate is still Republican. The majority leader, presumably Mitch McConnell, could then call up the nomination and say, let's have a vote on it. You could have a new HHS secretary working on how to put a new plan in place after getting rid of Obamacare. Man, wouldn't we just sort of have a sigh, a collective sigh of, whew, the grown-ups are here. The grown-ups are now here. The guys in the white horses are now here to save the day. We can dream, can't we? Okay, Iran sanctions. Democrats in the House getting really, really impatient with the Obama administration. Because in their mind, they're failing to respond quickly enough to Iran's test of the ballistic missile. So frustrated that you have two Democratic House members introducing legislation that basically says the next time Iran violates the international sanctions, that there will be a procedure for imposing new sanctions. Be linked to terrorism, human rights violations, or ballistic missile activities. Who are the two members of Congress? Democrat House Member Joe Kennedy. He's a Democrat from Massachusetts. Not exactly a conservative. And then you have Congressman Theodore Deutsch of Florida. I'm going to quote Congressman Kennedy. No response is in effect a response. If no responses are inconsistent or non-existent, ineffective, or delayed, those are actually responses. I'm quoting him again. When it comes to the enforcement mechanisms, Congress should be acting with the administration. There needs to be a mechanism to allow for stronger and a more rapid response going forward. So why did you get past the Iran sanctions, lifting of the Iran sanctions in the first place? What was that, Joe Kennedy? How did you vote on it last September? Anyway, they're getting frustrated, and they're considering trying to push something along. We'll see. We'll see. The president's budget is going to impose a $10 a tax on every barrel of oil. I'm not kidding you. And do you think this tax will hurt Americans all over the country, raising their energy costs? Of course it will. $10 per barrel. It's supposed to raise $32 billion a year. And for what? What's it going for? Wait for it. Clean energy and clean transit. Not making this up. He's adding $32 billion tax to the energy companies. You know what? It sounds like the president is working for a legacy that he is the most anti-energy president. If that's what he's going for, he's probably got it nailed. Think about what this president did. Even though he said he campaigns and says all the time, I'm for all of the above energy strategy. How many times have we heard him say that? I'm for all of the above energy strategy. His record shows he halted offshore drilling in the Gulf, decimated those coastal industries for months and months, rejected the Keystone Pipeline, and that would obviously give jobs, needed infrastructure, cap and trade. He's been bypassing Congress and putting cap and trade implementation through the EPA. He's had a literal assault on the coal industry through the EPA's Clean Coal Power Plant plan. Boy, that's our day. Since the beginning of the coal crusade, the one that the president has basically launched, 1,000 coal industry jobs have lost. So I would say he is the anti-energy president. $10 a gallon. This is interesting, though. You know, of course, members of Congress are going to push back on this. It's not going to make it through a Republican House or a Republican Senate. Will there be a vote on it in the Senate? Probably. 8 states did approve gas taxes last year. And then 8 others did the previous 2 years. So 16 states have increased their state gas tax. And, you know, the president says, well, the average price of a gallon of gas is the lowest it's been since 2009. So drivers can afford to pay more. Don't you love it when our federal government tells us what we can afford to do with our money? Ugh, it drives me absolutely bonkers. All right, let me flip back to the Senate for just a minute. The number 2 Senate Republican, John Cornyn, he's a Republican from Texas, went on the floor and called for a special counsel to be appointed on the conflict of interest dealing with Attorney General Lynch investigating the Obama administration, i.e. Hillary Clinton. And then you had Senate Judiciary Chairman Chuck Grassley, Republican from Iowa, says that Lynch ought to consider a special counsel to reassure, I'm quoting now, to reassure the country that the decisions are made, quote, without regard to any political considerations. Obviously, the Justice Department has declined to do anything like that. I think that drumbeat is going to get louder and louder as we learn more about the email situations for Hillary. I think that'll get louder and louder. When we learn more about the Clinton Foundation and the collusion between that and the State Department, I think it'll be louder and louder. You know, while we're talking about that, let's go to something. Uma Abedin, you know, she was Secretary Clinton's top aide, worked for the Secretary of State for years. Do you know she also worked for the Clinton Foundation? At the same time, how does that happen? How does that happen? You know, the Clinton Foundation was subpoenaed last fall by the State Department. This was in the Washington Post, and they said the scope and the status of the State Department's investigation was basically unknown. The subpoena focused on projects by the foundation that required State Department approval at the time Hillary was serving as Secretary of State. The investigators also demanded documents about Uma Abedin, the Clinton aide who simultaneously worked for her and the Clinton Foundation. That is such a conflict, folks, and I know you know this. That is such a conflict. You know, Article 1, Section 9, Clause 8 of our Constitution basically says this. I'm going to read it. Remember, it's a little bit of that old English. A person holding any office of profit or trust under them shall, without the consent of Congress, accept any present of any kind whatsoever from a king, prince, or a foreign state. The bottom line is, Uma Abedin worked for the State Department. She's getting a government paycheck. She also worked for the Clinton Foundation, and we know that hundreds of foreign governments gave money to the Clinton Foundation. Article 1, Section 9, Clause 8. Look it up, folks. All right, let me go back. Let's go back for a second to some election news. What about Ted Cruz? You want to hear it? Let me play a short video. I'm not going to play the whole thing. It's 4 minutes long. But it says, who is the real Ted Cruz? And I'm going to talk a little over it at the beginning because there's some silence. It's about him flip-flopping. Listen to some of this. It talks about metadata collection, amnesty, the gun background checks, Syrian refugee program. Take a listen here. Okay, this is going to start out with the metadata collection information. when it comes up.
It ends the federal government's bulk collection of phone metadata. It is long past time to end this program, and the USA Freedom Act does. If the old program covered 20-30%, the USA Freedom Act expands that, so now we have cell phones, now we have internet phones. The new program covers nearly 100%.
That was him saying he hated it at the beginning and basically was...
What Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton are proposing is that we bring to this country tens of thousands of Syrian Muslim refugees. I have to say, particularly in light of what happened in Paris, that's nothing short of lunacy.
I'm the son of a refugee from Cuba who fled oppression. And to the refugees who've come here today, let me say welcome. And I think the United States should always be a clarion voice for freedom.
The Department of Justice has said the only way to implement what they want, universal background checks, is a registry, a federal gun list, a federal list of every gun owner in America, and that would be wrong. It'd be unconstitutional. One of the things we could do is we could improve the quality of the federal database. Right now, a lot of states, a lot of local jurisdictions are not reporting criminal convictions, not reporting mental health barriers to ownership, and so the federal database is not nearly as good as it should be. That would be a common sense improvement.
You said, quote, "I've never supported legalization. I do not intend to support it."
I would urge people of good faith on both sides of the aisle, if the objective is to pass common sense immigration reform that secures the borders, that improves legal immigration, and that allows those who are here illegally to come in out of the shadows, then we should look for areas of bipartisan agreement and compromise to come together.
Actually, Brett, it is.
Okay, it keeps going. It's called Who is the Real Ted Cruz? You can look it up on YouTube. Those were just four issues. Amnesty, he was before, he was against it, and then he was for it. Gun background checks, nope, shouldn't be dealing with those. And then later on says we could work on fixing them and getting them better. Syrian refugees, should not at all have them come in, especially after Paris bombing. And then he's at the head of a committee hearing saying, good idea, and I'm the son of a refugee. The metadata collection thinks that's terrible, what the federal government is doing. Interestingly enough, remember, protecting the privacy of law-abiding citizens from the government, what Ted Cruz calls the Washington cartel, that is a pillar of his candidacy for president. That is, that's the central theme. Washington cartel, they're out of control. They're all about getting in our business. Well, guess what he has? He has what's called Cruz Crew. It's a mobile app. You sign up for it as a cell phone user, and it tracks your physical movements, mining the names and contact information in your phone. And that doesn't have anything to do with his campaign. It's fed into a vast database containing details about nearly every adult in the United States. It builds psychological profiles, and it's apparently pretty accurate. The Cruz app prompts supporters to register using their Facebook login, giving the campaign access to personal information, their name, their age, their gender, location, photographs, list of their friends, list of their relatives, all of that. All of that. It is scary, folks. It is scary. And it keeps going on and on. But yet he's supposed to be the president that's supposed to protect us from the Washington cartel. That's unbelievable in my mind. It's unbelievable. Let's just talk for 1 minute about some of the other presidential candidates. Ben Carson has a app like that. His campaign asks supporters to surrender some of this information, but he gives them an option to use it without providing any personal information. Carson's app separately asks users to let the campaign track their movement, and it gives you an option. Kasich, the Ohio governor, doesn't request any personal information from his app. Bernie Sanders, he's got one that says Feel the Burn, B-E-R-N for Bernie. It requires supporters to sign in using Facebook, and it asks to let their campaign track their movements, but it doesn't until you answer yes. And apparently Donald Trump and Hillary don't even have an officially sanctioned app. So Cambridge is the company that is teaming up with Ted Cruz. They say anybody that is providing information is doing so voluntarily. Data used to outline is all legal, and it's disclosed on the website. You know what? That's that big, long legalese thing that we all sign when we agree to something. You know, when you sign up for something and you get two pages of legalese and you have to agree or disagree, we all say we agree. Listen to this. In the hours before Iowa, the campaign used the app and it pushed an urgent message through. So you got a text message. The app displayed a text message that urged supporters to encourage them to go to the caucuses, tell their friends, urging them to caucus for Cruz. Nothing wrong with that. But what if everybody in your phone got that text message because you signed up for Ted Cruz's app? And then they all got the same message. Is that what you intended? I don't know. I don't know. I'm just telling you. You got Donald Trump, Ted Cruz. Everybody is in South Carolina. And Ted Cruz is there with none other than Glenn Beck. They had 2,000 people meet last night at a Fort Mill megachurch. And they got to see Glenn Beck. So they're pulling out all the stops, folks. They are literally pulling out all the stops. All right, I want you to listen to Debbie Wasserman Schultz here for just a minute. Try to explain how Hillary ended up with more of the votes as far as delegates for the Democratic convention than Bernie Sanders did. Just take a listen for a few minutes.
Tonight, joining me now to preview the Democrats' matchup, Democratic National Committee Chair Debbie Wasserman Schultz, also a Democratic Congresswoman from Florida. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Dave. Great to be here.
So in an exclusive interview with CNN just now, Senate Minority Leader Harry Reid, the Democrat from Nevada, said he expected the Democratic race to go on for months. He said there might even be a contested convention. Is that possible?
I mean, I have enormous respect for Leader Reid, and he's been absolutely remarkable in fighting for our agenda. I do think that this will be continue to be a robust primary that will play out over the course of the next several months. But there were predictions of a brokered convention, a fight that would go all the way to the convention in 2008, if you recall, Jake, and that didn't happen. It didn't happen because this was wrapped up in a timely process through the normal primary schedule, and I think that's the case. That will be the case here.
All right, so a respectful disagreement with Leader Reid. Hillary Clinton lost to Bernie Sanders in New Hampshire by 22 percentage points, the biggest victory in a contested Democratic primary there since John F. Kennedy. But it looks as though Clinton and Sanders are leaving the Granite State with the same number of delegates in their pockets because Clinton has the support of New Hampshire's superdelegates, these party insiders. What do you tell voters who are new to the process who says this makes them feel like it's all rigged?
Well, let me just make sure that I can clarify exactly what was available during the primaries in Iowa and in New Hampshire. The unpledged delegates are a separate category. The only thing available on the ballot in a primary and a caucus is the pledged delegates, those that are tied to the candidate that they are pledged to support, and they receive a proportional number.
She gives a bunch of double talk that is just doesn't make any sense. I want to get to something else real quick, and we're about to run out of time. The president's daily schedule. I do this every week. He's in Palm Springs. Why is he in Palm Springs? He's in California. He granted national monument status to 1.8 million acres in Southern California. I'm not kidding you. The government now owns another 1.8 million acres in Southern California. The White House says it will maintain in perpetuity the region's fragile ecosystem and natural resources, as well as recreational opportunities for bikers and campers. 1.8 million acres, the White House and our government has just taken again in some regulation, some way, somehow. All right, folks, I'm going to leave you. That's it this week. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm going to leave you with Marco Rubio's theme song again. I love it. Have a great, great weekend, and I will talk to you on Monday. Again, thanks for listening. Stay tuned.
Bring your tithes and bring your shame. Bring your guilt and bring your pain. Don't you know that's not your name? You will always be much more to me. And every day I wrestle with the voices that keep telling me I'm not right. But that's alright, 'cause I hear a voice and it calls me redeemed. When others say I'll never be enough, and greater is the one living inside of me than he who is living in the world.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then, taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.